Hello, friends. Check out Paranormality Magazine. It's a community-based project born out of a love for the strange, unexplained, and paranormal, as well as a fascination with the people and creators that make the community what it is. Exploring all 40 subjects from phantoms to UFOs and every cryptid creature in between. Their global team collects stories, conducts interviews, and reports on the cutting-edge paranormal projects that are driving the community forward. A digital subscription to Paranormality Magazine is only $3.99 a month, with print subscriptions also available. You can use coupon code FKN and get 10% off your subscription. It's the best way to support independent, community-based paranormal projects like ours and the ones we feature. Just click that link in the description to get started now. Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today my guest is Nathaniel Gillis. First, a couple of announcements. On March 26th, we begin our docuseries adventure, but we need your help. If you have enjoyed the content Forbidden Knowledge News has provided over the past 7+ years, and you would like to help us step up our game and produce a docuseries unlike anything you've ever seen, you can help with a travel donation. We have a PayPal link in the description, a Buy Me a Coffee. Anything is greatly appreciated. Any donation of $80 or more, and you will get a one-on-one, one-hour Q&A session with yours truly, as well as your name in the credits of every docuseries episode. The first episode is going to be a FKN Louisiana origin story for myself. I'm going to also cover paranormal and historical hotspots and other places of interest, complete with interviews and conversations with witnesses, experts, and maybe even you. We're going to be heading from northern Colorado down through Oklahoma and Texas to South Louisiana, where I was born. We have a few states in mind we'll be traveling to for filming, but if you have any suggestions for locations or if you have experiences or information about events or legends, let me know. Email me, forbiddenknowledgenews@gmail.com. We would love to meet some of you along the way. Like I said, if you'd like to help with the donation for the production assistance, use one of the links below. Or anything else, email me, forbiddenknowledgenews@gmail.com. Check out our website, forbiddenknowledge.news. This is the home of the Forbidden Knowledge Network. That's where we feature some of your favorite podcasts. And you can always get every new episode of Forbidden Knowledge News on Rockfin, Rumble, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. Check out our Rockfin, because Rockfin is where you get our premium content. You also get all the premium content from every creator on Rockfin. Just use the link in the description or go to rockfin.com/FKN+. Today I want to welcome back to the show Nathaniel Gillis. He is a religious demonologist and author. After living in a haunted house, he spent 20 years researching what it was he encountered. He has sought to redefine the nature of haunting phenomena, ghosts, and high strangeness. He's often quoted for his concept of the demonic. The reason they are playing by different rules is because they are playing a different game. Nathaniel, welcome back. How you doing?
I am doing really good, man. I'm glad to be back with you. It's been a bit. But it's always a pleasure, Chris. It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, man. I really, really enjoy delving into your work, especially with what has been occurring in the UFO community, from deceptive experiencers to Chinese UFO balloons. There's plenty of angles to the UFO alien narrative that I believe have been intentionally introduced into our mass consciousness from decades of predictive programming in Hollywood and historical literature. And I was talking with a guest last week about, and I was talking with you about this before the show, about an educational film I saw in the 8th or 9th grade. I was going to a Christian school at the time, and they showed a possible portrayal of the future apocalypse and the series of events that would begin to unfold in our near future. At the time, I thought this video was hilarious, and if any of you out there went to Catholic or Christian school, maybe you saw this video. Maybe you could let me know who made this. I'd love to know that. It's a low-budget, bad acting, but looking back now at what it showed would happen, pandemics, wars, I think they even showed like a possible EMP, and then finally a full-scale false flag alien invasion. And this was like I said, early 90s, late 80s, super cheesy. And I really wish I would have known who made the film, but fast forward to now. The video is very creepy and very prophetic, and I want to get your insights into the possibilities of what is happening now. And you've also done some research that I believe may be connected to this in many ways. I believe a lot of this stuff is connected very profoundly, and that is hybrids. Now, we're going to get into that, but first I want to get your thoughts on that kind of predictive programming that I was mentioning in my introduction and the role that it's played in our consciousness with aliens and UFOs.
Yeah, I think it's especially interesting. I mean, like, I can remember growing up and going to my grandmother's house and watching just some of the scariest alien invasion movies ever. And you're right, they're cheesy as heck now when we're older. We look back and we're like, why was I afraid of that? You know what I mean? Yeah. But, you know, that's what we were kind of, like you said, conditioned to believe, that if there was an invasion to occur, you know, there would be spaceships everywhere and these beings are coming in like Signs, you know, the M. Night Shyamalan movie. Yet it is conditioning us to believe that only an invasion of that nature could or even would occur. It doesn't really prepare us for the hybridization program. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, is it predictive programming? Is it them trying to indoctrinate us so that we can essentially be looking in this direction for an invasion, and they're invading our species by virtue of, you know, mixing DNA and chimeras and whatnot? Mm-hmm. But I can't remember. There was a show. I don't even know if it was a show or a movie, but somebody had been abducted. It's been a long time now. I'm 34, so it's probably when I was like 10. It was on TV, man. It was creepy, creepy, creepy. And then, when I look back at it, like, the CGI was awful. You know what I mean? It's kind of one of those things. When you get older, you're kind of like, wait a minute. I don't know. I do think that along with certain experience or accounts, that there is propaganda involved, in that according to some researchers, that our government is going to implement a false invasion by these beings. And if they are, it's not going to be something that's close to the data or, you know, that has its ear to the ground. It's going to be something along the lines of what we've been programmed to believe, right? It's going to be spaceships and, oh my God, they're here. We got to take control over everything. So it's kind of a toss up at this point. But I do consider it, much of it, to be propaganda, to where we would be looking one way and they're invading us in an entirely different direction.
Now, before we get too deep into your research into the hybrids, do you think that there is a level of human collaboration or human deception when it comes to the whole UFO narrative? Do you think that we are being steered in any way by high-level entities or secret societies that want us to go in this UFO direction?
100%. Absolutely. I think that's evidenced by the data. I think that when we get it, especially Dr. Carl Turner's work and other people, other researchers in the field, but what we're dealing with, again, is this highly deceptive species. I mean, right now we're not even sure if they're greys or if they're reptilians or not. I mean, there's case studies out there where, and I've worked on these myself, where you experiencers in the middle of an abduction account, and they think they're discussing things with the gray, or talking to a gray, and the gray itself turns them sideways, and it was just a mask it was wearing. It was some kind of you know what I mean? It was a cloak in a sense. So that wasn't really even a gray, and so it's very deceptive. The other day, by the way, I've been doing shows, so if you guys have heard this before, forgive me, because people that follow my work, like, I've heard that before. Well, my bad. but, even with the guys that seemingly abduct people, there's deception involved. If you look at the phenomenon, the way it can deceive us, I mean, it can appear as Dear Aunt Edna, and it can appear as a future version of us. It could appear as God, Jesus. I shouldn't say God, because God has no image. Right. But you know what I mean? Jesus or Muhammad, Mickey Mouse, when they abduct children. And so I think that the proper way to understand this phenomenon is through the lens of them wearing masks. Right. And so that's what I had to learn early on in my research of demonology, was that I got tired of these names. Right. And they're mainly just descriptions. This is how tall the demon is. I don't care. Because what I realized is, like, man, this is just masks. So we have to look at what they're doing. Right. And it's like with that remote viewer I was working with, or his son, the gentleman was being given all kinds of prophecies, and some of them came true to the detail, on the day, the hour you're going to be here at a restaurant, you're going to see a guy named Jerry, that kind of stuff. And then the next prophecy fell on its face. Like, it was completely in shambles. It was completely wrong. And my question now is, how can a being or beings have so much knowledge, right? I mean, with Betty Luca, they told her when her children would die, and they did. How would they have so much knowledge and foreknowledge and then fumble the bag, if you will, with these other, And so the phenomenon is highly deceptive. And I think that as researchers in the field, what we're trying to do, and I'm not speaking for everybody, but my circle of friends, we're trying to sift through the propaganda and look at what they're doing, not what they're saying they're doing, but what are they actually doing?
And a huge basis of this is that this has been, just like you said, a trickster type of entity that has been attempting to communicate and have influence on us since probably the dawning of man. Now, that being said, how far back do you think the hybridization aspect has gone? And if it has been more than a couple of decades or even 100 years, what does that mean to what we are now as humans?
Well, I think that the research I've done and the data suggests that this hybridization program has been going on forever, ever since recorded history. Now, my last lecture with on my show's Ghost Notes, what I was describing was how the phenomenon will kind of self-update. It will update itself. And so a lot of times, if we get too close to what it's really doing, it's like a program. It'll scan us in our research, see what we've gotten right, see what we've gotten wrong, and then update. And during this updating process, it will change masks. But during this changing of masks, they will also reincorporate their agenda into this new movement, into this new hypothesis, if you will. And so early on in Genesis 6, our ancestors perceived these beings to have been fallen angels. And so, the hybridization program began when they went into women, they conceived a hybrid child, and then essentially they would step in, they would place their own consciousness into that fetus. And so their idea of these beings was that they were not just unclean spirits, that they were disembodied or essentially homeless, right? And so what they were doing is they needed a body to inhabit. And so from that point on, they changed masks. Once the demonologists, even though they weren't called that at that point, once their researchers started understanding, okay, enough with the titles, these are just programs that the phenomenon works upon us. Then again, it changed, but it also reincorporated, right, that new mass, the new hypothesis, the missing fetus syndrome in the hybridization program. And that's when we get into what I call the satanic panic, where now it's not just fallen angels, then it went into these fallen angels being demons, and demons are doing this, right? And so now you have demons like Lamanchtu, who in the middle of the night this being would descend down upon pregnant women, stare into their eyes, induce them into a very, very heavy sleep, and then steal the fetus from their womb. He was called the baby snatcher. And so what pregnant women were doing is they were taking metal and iron and creating a second face and wearing that second face as a necklace. So in hopes, this is heartbreaking when you think about it, in hopes that even when they're asleep, because they did not really know how to deal with this being, in hopes that when they're asleep, that La Manchetou would be confused and look into the wrong eyes. Thereby, when they wake up, the baby would still be there and they would have warded off this evil, evil entity. So, and I can keep it going on, but these are nuances and highlights of the phenomenon that I think research, especially in ufology, they don't go back far enough, right? It's like people, I talk to people all the time, and I'm not disrespecting them. I love them to death, and I have a high respect for them, and I hold them in high regard. But there are certain people out there saying, okay, this phenomenon started in the 60s. Well, your research may have started in the 60s, which is sad to say, but the phenomenon has been here, and it's evolving according to our awareness of it. And that's very troubling. And I can go on and give you case studies, but right now we're stopping in. We're almost up to the 11th century to the 16th centuries, where once again it changes the mask, but it again reincorporates what it really wants to do. It does imply that they are working with the timetable here, at least in our dimension, right?
Now, where do you think the implementation of technology is going to lead with all of this? Like you said, the phenomenon keeps morphing and changing, and we went from seeing airships to flying discs, and now it's kind of evolved into different plasma energies or Tic Tacs and more technological type things. As our technology advances, we perceive these things as different ways. Do you think these are just using our thought forms to manifest and evolve with our evolution, or is this some type of grand trickster, an overarching energy, or is it different types of energies with a sort of hierarchy to it?
It could be all of the above, all the above, and both and. How about that? Both and. When we're getting into who and what they are, it's hard to understand that. But we do know their capabilities. Mark D'Antonio, my brother, is a website genius. Okay, so what he does is he gets paid by companies to create websites and monitor content. He was working with Mark D'Antonio and Christopher O'Brien, and they were applying just cameras everywhere in the Utah Basin. And they had captured a video of a, and this is crazy, not a craft, but some kind of organic vessel. And it had shaped itself like a plane. But when they zoomed in on it, it wasn't a plane at all, but from the naked eye, right? If you were driving down I-75 with your family, you'd look up and think, oh, that's just a 747, or that's a jet or something. And really, it was a living entity that had mimicked an entire aircraft. So I think this points to the fact that there's more going on than just beings who want to help us evolve in our consciousness. Then why probe children? Why pull souls out of bodies? Right? It's so much deeper and darker than what a lot of researchers want to admit, because, and I'm not going to say that, but that's what I'm trying to articulate here, is that there's something deeper at hand here. It's not just, okay, I'm going to threaten you with death because I want to evolve your consciousness. Makes perfect sense. No, it doesn't. We have to be real with the data here and look at the implications for us as a species. And I don't want to ramble, but
now I want to get your thoughts on this. There's some researchers that believe that where we're headed with technology and the possible merger of our biology with technology and how we're interacting with all these bots and AI, that it could be a future somehow vessel for these foreign fallen angels to 100%. Inhabit our technology. What do you think about that?
I think that, well, first of all, I have been thinking about that. Something that's very, very unique about our situation is that right now in the 21st century, just the science that we're hearing about, not the, you know, the dark room science or the stuff that's in black budgets, but stuff that we're able to read in Reader's Digest or, you know, on a Facebook post or something. We know that our scientists right now are creating fake wombs, artificial wombs, and using artificial insemination. Well, if we can do that, they can. But they're choosing to be born of a woman. What does that even mean, right? Like, what's really going on here? It's like, okay, because if they wanted to self-replicate, then they could just go, you know, fabricate some new bodysuit. Yeah. But something else is going on here, because that's not what they're doing. Like, to this day, they're inseminating women and spewing the fetus. So it's a lot more than just recreating a species from some bio lab, right? Or some, you know, using some artificial intelligence technology. There's something that has to do with being born of blood and water, being born, going through the birth canal. And then, or even just being, you know, in the womb itself that they're after. And, but moving even deeper with that, I do believe that if and when they want to use AI as their own intelligence or as their own avatars, we have a significant problem on our hands, because I've had my own cases where these beings have hacked into phones somehow. I had an Incubi case where the husband had challenged the entity. And one night he was cooking dinner. The entity had called him from a block number, and he said, Nathaniel, he said, I'm looking at my iPhone. And he said, next thing you know, it's either an iPhone or the Android. But he said, next thing I know, he said, the little button on the bottom swipes right, and it unlocks my phone and answers it. It goes on speakerphone and begins to call me over there. Come here and talk to me. Come here and talk to me. Now, I think that if they can possess people like they did, or partially possess people like they did with Tammy Stone and Collins Elite Research, where she's an abductee, she's on the highway, she's driving, and next thing she knows, something is downloaded into her brain, and it forces her to swerve her car and almost gets hit head on. If they can do that with us as a biological entity, what else can they do with something that can be hacked?
That
right?
So
that's the scary part.
It is. Now, while we're talking about the evolution of this phenomenon, I had a guest a few times on. Her name is Vicky Joy Anderson. I'm not sure if you're familiar with her research. Mm-hmm. She does research into sleep paralysis and the possibility that there are entities that are involved with this. And she studies many people's sleep paralysis cases. And she said she's noticed over the past decade or so an evolution in the phenomena. It used to be like incubi and succubi phenomena, where they would have these astral entities, demonic or shadow people, more metaphysical type experiences. And she said that now people's sleep paralysis are evolving into more technological type of entities, more android or robotic interacting entities. They would still be frightening in some ways, but it would seem more technological. And it makes me think that, is this phenomena trying to also evolve with the different aspects that it can affect us in our reality, like sleep paralysis or other paranormal phenomena? What do you think about that?
I think it's a valuable point of view. And again, the phenomenon does evolve. Now, it may evolve in its entirety, or it may evolve according to one person's experience. But for sure, there is technology involved. It's not like, okay, it's not just nuts and bolts and then spirituality or esotericism. It's both. It's not a dichotomy. There are duality with what we're discussing here. One thing that I love to highlight in this, sometimes, you know, people don't want to talk about it, but it is a sexual pathology. And when you get into Eros and Evil with Aria Masters, he talks about witch era literature, and this gets right back into the hybrid aspect of the field. But you know, these beings were taking witches on demonic flights. It's what they were called in witch hair literature. Think about that. We got to get rid of these titles, right? If we look at what's occurring, not who took them, but what's occurring, yes, they're being taken. And anyways, they were being taken to witches' sabbats, and they thought that they were copulating with demons and fallen angels and corpses. And so they're trying to perform their rituals and their, you know, all this stuff. And then I don't know if it was an internet connection or what, but the technology faltered. And for a fleeting moment, these women are looking around and they're realizing that's not a man, that's a program, right? That's not a demon, that's a program. And these were, it was some form of robotic technology because they were being poked and prodded by metallic objects that were literally made to the measure of a man, right? To where it was the theatrical production of theatrical productions, but it was designed to deceive them. So the sensations were there, but that's not at all what was occurring, right? And they wrote that down. Montague Summers talks about that. Ariel Masters does. And Astrari talks a little bit about the hybridization program. But again, the deceptive nature of the phenomenon cannot be highlighted enough. If you want to deceive me, if you want to help me, don't deceive me. In the theory that I've been hearing lately, and I respect and I love these people, but you know, well, if I told you to jump out of a helicopter, you wouldn't do it. But what if I told you that the helicopter was on the ground? That's well and good. We don't know if the helicopter even exists in our research,
Right.
right? So that does, I mean, it's a good little theory that people can promote at, you know, conferences and get autographs. But when we look at the data and have a serious intellectual discourse about this, it falls flat on its face because we're not dealing with helicopters and we really don't know if the floor exists with this stuff.
It is
Is it
very
even there?
interesting to see the UFO, especially the New Age love and light UFO
Oh,
community,
God,
and some of the
yeah.
messages that come out of there. What we're seeing is a message that there will be some sort of extraterrestrial savior that will come along, or that we
Right.
will ascend to this new reality. We are
Yeah.
always waiting on some sort of savior with these types of communities. So I think there's a huge deception going on there as well.
I think it's glaringly obvious, my friend, and I think that it's being disingenuous to tell people otherwise. My God, we're dealing with dark stuff. And I'm not saying it's all dark, but let me hypothesize and let me reason with some people, because I love and respect you all, okay? Including you too, buddy. I'm not trying to reason with you, but I'm just saying in general, man.
Thank
Like,
you,
look,
man.
so here's the problem. I treat the phenomenon in my own mind like a good neighbor across the street, okay? Sometimes when I'm on vacation, he'll come over and cut my grass for me. Or he'll text me and say, "Hey man, I know you're at work, but there's some strange character looking through your windows or something. You know, you left your garage door open, Nate," something like that. And I'm thinking, man, you know, he also cooks amazing ribs at 4th of July. Sometimes I get to snag a beer with him every now and then. And then I'm thinking, no, he seems to be a great guy, but every now and then he takes my wife out of her own body for a few hours. What are we thinking? Right?
Yeah.
He's all good, but every now and then my kid goes missing and we can't find him. And you know who it was? It was that neighbor. Great guy, though. So how stupid can this possibly be? And I'm sorry, but you know, here's what we're dealing with, and this is it's kind of a maddening hilarity. We have people that look at the quantity of good experiences versus the quantity of bad. We can't do that because because as small as some of these negative experiences are, the implications outweigh, right, the good. I mean, like I said, great ribs, but where's my kid at? It's not like you took my car for a joyride. No, because that would be kind of, that would tip the scale to where it's almost, it's not a big deal. You know what I mean? I don't like it. You shouldn't do that ever again. No, that's not what we're dealing with. We're dealing with Bob Luca rolling out in the bed in the middle of the night and seeing his wife's apparition leave her body.
It does
It's
seem like
way darker.
there is an agenda to get us to trust these entities and to be accepting and possibly willing for them to save us or help us with some future event. Right. And this is all being implanted into our consciousness gradually through these wonderful experiencers that then go around to conferences and talk about their beautiful experiences in combination with the predictive programming I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, it's called manufactured consent. I'm going to give you a scenario here. We have an historical account of a guy named Yeshua or Jesus. Whether or not people believe he even exists, it's not my point. Even, let's just call them stories, even the stories, which I don't believe they are, but even just, let's go with that, even the stories, Jesus never taught that Ra was God. Not one time did that come out of his mouth according to the written gospels. Then, and this is what the Bible says, test the spirits. But these abductees are saying, like one guy that we know, you know, that's God in the UFO, and Jesus is up there, and Jesus right now is telling his son all this stuff that Ra is God. Now, do you think that they would have told that to the late Michael Heiser? Let me give you a big H no, because he was a Hebrew scholar, and he would have saw through or seen through the lie and have been like, that's nonsense. He would have never said that. Right? Okay, so I had an experience where, okay, she was abducted and she called on Jesus. Jesus manifested. But again, it's ahistorical because their goal is to get us to do whatever they want us to do at any cost. So Jesus manifests. Excuse me, he's a Swedish Presbyterian Jesus. Right? Because it doesn't matter that it's the real or not. It doesn't matter. To them, it's, okay, we have him too. And what they did is they plucked an image out of that individual's mind. What's he look like? Well, this is how I picture him. He looks like a lot of these panties, man. Blonde hair. Looks like that guy that, you know, fixes my chicken at KFC. It doesn't look like the olive skin, right, Jew that he was. So, I mean, you know, it's ahistorical. And so, and that's my point, is that if it was really Jesus, he wouldn't have argued against his own gospel. Think about that. How profound that is. This gets back to Dr. Carl Turner's case with Ted Rice. Ted Rice thought that he had been talking to his guides for years, man. And then finally he gets abducted by them and they want to have intercourse with his grandmother.
Whoa.
Why would, right? So they're playing the long game in many cases. But again, it is deception. And we're trying to understand at this point in the field, my group of friends, my group of researchers that I'm with, is that how deep does the deception go?
Yes, that's a good question. And I want to explore two different angles of this. One, the more metaphysical, astral, spiritual one, that the classic angle that we've all been used to. And then the newer one that you mentioned, programming, a few times. The implications of technological integration with some of this, it could be very disheartening if you look at how far back it could have been a technological phenomenon the whole time. And if so, what does that mean for our reality? What does that mean for what we're interfacing with, what we consider paranormal, what we consider spiritual, what we consider angels or demons? You know, is this all some sort of programming that we're subjected to just by being in this reality? What do you think about that?
I think it's both programming and a recruiting process. A recruiting process where in the past they've recruited people after death. They've groomed them in their life, preparing them for the afterlife, like giving them life skills or what I call afterlife skills. It's like with Betty Luke, and they took her out of her body and they showed her how to fly a craft. She never flew a craft in her entire time in her body. They weren't teaching her muscle memory. They even told her, you won't remember this. And then until she had some regressive sessions, then it started to come to the surface. And she goes, oh, yeah, by the way, they took me out of my body, showed me how to fly a craft. Why? And I think, again, this is why we have people like Whitley Strieber and other experiencers and a mountain of other experiencers who've also said that when they're abducted, they witness deceased loved ones or people that have lived and died. And many of these people have lived and died, and they're wearing in the abduction, they're still wearing the clothes they died in. Now, let's go down this rabbit hole. God, it's terrifying when you think about it, because even if that isn't the real individual, how did the phenomenon know what that individual died in?
Right.
It's really, really, really interesting and fascinating, but it's terrifying at the same time. Now, I do want to say this, that they are seemingly recruiting people, and I think our government knows this. It's not a conspiracy theory. This is why the government, they stopped just investigating UFOs. Now they're moving on. We don't know how long they've been doing this exactly, but now they're investigating people who can see them.
Yeah.
Like, what is it about this individual that the phenomenon, it's almost like sometimes the phenomenon will go up to somebody and say, hey, do you see me? Right? And then that person, they engage with that person. And there's a reason for that. And this is why Diana Walsh-Masuka said it's almost an initiation into a mystery school, which, and tell me, I'll stop talking, man. I start to ramble sometimes.
No, man, keep going. I love it.
It makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense as to why Crowley and Parsons were contacted. They were a part of mystery schools. It makes sense as to why these beings were called the Raphaim, excuse me, in men of old in Genesis. Raphaim were your exorcists who were also performing rites, and we would call it sorcery. They were performing esoteric rituals. That's who these beings are, not just manifesting to or trying to get people, trying to get them to conjure, but they're seemingly recruiting them. And during that process, Parsons did that, and he got information from them, and we use that in our rocketry program.
But, now, yeah, to connect some more angles, they did those experiments out in the desert. Well, you look at what's happening in the Uintah Basin, Skinwalker Ranch. Aerospace companies are highly interested in the high strange paranormal phenomena that's going out there. And they're going out there and they're doing experiments and they're trying to probably weaponize this in certain ways. And what they say, you know, try and understand it. But if you look at the things that are happening around that area, Skinwalker, Uintah Basin, it's a perfect example of the trickster aspects of this, of how you see this. It seems like an overarching intelligence that can mold to each individual's consciousness, and it's always 10 to 50 steps ahead of whoever is trying to interact with it. It could mimic even the most advanced of technologies and then one up that technology. So that is a perfect example out there in those areas. And just like you were saying, the interest that high level organizations have with this phenomenon and what they could be doing technologically with it.
100%. And, I think I did a show. I did a show on my show, the Ghost Hunts Unleashed Project, where I talk about who's conjuring who here. We have people out there who thought that doing CE5 was them conjuring these beings. And in reality, it's almost like they're the ones being conjured. And these beings are looking for some kind of mortal portal to manifest through. You know, it's not just Ouija boards. It's CE5. It's what our government does down the street from me at Wright Pat. Employing what's called the Parsons technique, where they perform esoteric rituals, hoping that the phenomenon will pity them as a species and give them some kind of technology. You know, at what cost? At what cost? I had a lady that reached out to me after doing a CE5 experiment with, and it was orchestrated, it was designed, it was guided. Best of intentions, and a full-bodied apparition manifested to her.
Wow.
Oops, that's not extraterrestrial, is it?
Yeah.
Right? No, it's, again, this phenomenon is, it's complex and it masks itself, but it is conjuring people to it. Conjuring people to it. And I think that's one of the most important aspects of the research to date is, okay, what do these people have? Now, there are researchers out there in our government that's looking at their DNA structure and looking at it, is there anything different? Is there anything different in their brain? But we're still trying to understand. But what we're seeing, though, is that, again, the esoteric aspect cannot be ignored. It must be understood the way it is occurring. It's not an accident that Crowley was contacted by these beings in that they looked almost identical to the Grey. Mind you, that entity never told Crowley it was an extraterrestrial, because Crowley thought he was working with fallen angels, or angels entirely.
Now, because
yeah,
of
it's disturbing.
The deceptive nature of this, many researchers believe that there's a crossover between extraterrestrials and the afterlife, that grandma's hanging out with E.T. in the afterlife and they're having tea or a party out there. But there seems to be, like you said, a very deceptive nature of what's going on, as some of these entities can just willingly appear as grandmother. So what do you think about these possible deceptions and connections to the afterlife, and what's happening with people's astral experiences where they may meet a benevolent entity or deity and they're intentionally leaving their body in the evening and they can have these profound out-of-body experiences? Do you think that what they're interacting with is all this same type of deceptive entity?
I do. And I do. Okay. However, I do believe that there are certain times where the experiencer will witness a genuinely deceased individual, where the phenomenon is not masking as one. That's it. See, usually when it masks as one, it's engaging you, right? It wants you to do something with it, or it wants to do something to you. That's a mask. What really boggles my mind is when someone's just hanging out in one of these UFO hangars or something, or these metallic rooms, and there comes somebody, and they don't even know who it is. It's a human, right? Or even when they do know who it is, they recognize that person. There's no eye contact. There's no communication. There's no engagement. They just see it going, moving with the aliens or whatever, moving with the beings. What we do know is they're masters of consciousness, even. Consciousness. We have accounts where they can pull the soul out of the body and put it in a black box. Like it's a tangible aspect to it. There's a constitution to consciousness in a way. So whatever we're dealing with, I do believe that there are certain characteristics that it has that is not dissimilar to the watchers of old in biblical antiquity. That was one of the very first, if not the first, legend about, okay, who these beings were, why it is they have these abilities, and all that. I mean, one writer talks about how it's an Apocalypse of Ezra, where these beings were designed to guard the bodies and the spirits of the deceased. We could check that box, right? Because if they're with them, and so even more than that, if these are the beings that were in charge of guarding the most vulnerable of us, bodies and souls, and they're the ones that turned on us as a species, then that makes sense as to why they're capturing some people at the moment of their death. Or even to the point where they're orchestrating entire death scenarios to pluck the soul out of their body and threaten them. One person at Beyond UFOs had a catastrophic accident, a car accident, and they threatened him. You know, you either be our prophet or we're going to let you die. Or, you know, if you be our prophet, we'll put you back in your body. Now, so far, it seems with a lot of these experiencers that are returning and having all these big time shows and lectures and everything, they haven't had to deal with that, right? Because it didn't go to that level of, hey, listen, I know you don't want to do what we want you to do. We're going to kill you. To date, I mean, a lot of these people are saying, okay, I'll, you know, they use the good cop part of it. And I'll just do it all, right?
Yeah.
But how many people decided not to go along with their narrative and they let them die, just like they would have with this individual? It's a harrowing thought.
It is. Yeah, man, it's crazy. Now, I want to go back to there's a fine line between what we understand as magic and technology, and you touched on that earlier.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff that occurs at Skinwalker Ranch is somewhat indiscernible between magic and technology, especially the accounts that I've heard. Some of the witnesses from that area, some of the researchers that I've interviewed from that area that have discussed incidents like what seems like nanobots forming physical objects or vice versa. A coyote will come out and then turn into a tornado of nanoparticulates. One man was attacked by a nanoparticulate beast that then just whisked away into the wind into these little particles. So, and it seemed like it was moving in a technological manner as well. So that is a very interesting aspect to add as well.
Yeah, when you're looking at a phenomenon, and I don't even, you know, whatever species we want to call them, when we're looking at even a technology that can design something on a molecular level, like literally creating the atoms and then building it up to something, that would be alien. I mean, it's almost unfathomable. We don't even have the vocabulary to articulate that level of technology and gifting. Now, there are, again, insights that we have received as a species by these beings, but, you know, through Jack Parsons and other practitioners, but what are we leveraging, right? And I think that's what really punctuates, if you will, our situation as a human race, because it's almost like our leading scientists know so much about the phenomenon and their capabilities, their technologies, that our only hope is to go in some dimly lit room at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and start performing esoteric rites that we pulled from Jack Parsons' diary. Our only hope is that during that covenant relationship with them, or during that communication, they would feel sorry for us. That's what Nick Redford put in his book, Final Events, and it's one of the things that he wrestled with, because it was like, this is our only option, that maybe they will pity us to the point, or that we'll see through the veil will thin enough for us to get a glimpse of who and what they're doing. And even then, we're leveraging what? Us? Jack Parsons said he was leveraging his soul. And if somebody was a Philemite gun on me, it's me, my, you know, he saw my show I did with Christina Gomez and love her to death, but he was like, you know, I didn't like that guy. He's, I don't care. It doesn't mean Jack Parsons wasn't doing what he was doing. It doesn't matter if you like me. It doesn't matter if I like you. It's pointless at this, you know. But that's my point here is that at what cost, you know, I mean, Parsons was doing that and said that, you know, I believe that when I die, they will take my soul. What?
They just might.
It might. Probably did.
Yeah, man, that's crazy stuff. Now, do you think that it is possible at all to interact with the afterlife, with a genuine soul or spirit that's passed, like grandma or an uncle, something that's not trying to deceive us in any way?
Absolutely, absolutely. A long time ago, before I even got into this field, I was working at an engine plant in Ohio, and one of my favorite people there, we were talking, and this lady, I didn't even know she had a religious bone in her body. I just thought she was just straight, you know, like, just really straight as an arrow and just agnostic or even atheist. And it came out that we never really talked about it. So finally, when we did, we started talking about, obviously, I was bored, so it was like my interest, you know, like, what do you believe about death and the afterlife, you know, trying to, you know, pass time, man.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, she goes, I didn't believe in it at all. She said, but she goes, I was on my honeymoon with my husband, and my best friend's son walked right through the door of the hotel, looked at me, and said, I want you to tell my mother that she has to let me go. I have to leave, but she's holding me back. He had no context. Just looked at him and said, I will. And he goes, okay, thank you. Walks right through the door and he's gone. No history, you know, no frame of reference. Like there was no answer to why would you say that, you know? So she immediately called her best friend. Her best friend was bawling. He just got in a fatal car accident.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's when I look at the minimal amount of contact. You know, there was no, I mean, it was very interesting. I mean, I don't know. But I think if anything has an implication of them telling the truth, or if that was an actual ghost, that would be it.
Now, along those same lines, do you think that there are other non-human entities that may have our best interests in mind, maybe spirit guides, maybe other types of intelligences that we could interact with that aren't trying to deceive us?
Yes, but we don't. Okay, so this is what I believe by testing the spirits. If it is your grandmother or your mother, it will not, they will not tell you to do something that's antithetic to their life. I don't care if they told you, this is where your keys are when you lost them. That happens a lot, right? Well, listen, it has to be my mom, because she told me where my favorite hat was, and I hadn't seen it in years. Okay, right? More than that, what is going on? There are people out there right now that are remote viewers, like Ted Rice was, like the individual whose son I was working with, who the beings are playing a long game, where these beings will give you enough rope. And then when they want to do something, they'll have built such a foundation of fulfilled prophecy that you'll be like, you know what? They told me this would happen. It's right. It's going to happen. And then next thing you know, they start employing their agenda. And you're sitting there going, I got to do it now. I got to do it. It's like John Dee. John Dee, he was working, him and Edward Kelly were working with a being who was manifesting in a mirror. And at first, it was a beautiful, what they called a handmaid, or handmaid, beautiful girl in a white dress, whatever, talking to them. I'm going to give you the Enochian language. I'm going to do all these things for you. And he even told John Dee, I want you to go to the Bishop of Cambridge, I think it was, and tell him that he's in an affair. And if he doesn't tell his wife and get things made right, things are going to happen to him. He did it. Great. And then he goes back. And then she says, I would like you guys to swap wives. And then he realized, wait a minute. Sure, that was right. You know what I mean? But what happened was the phenomenon said, okay, now I've got you. I've got the hook in. Now I'm going to do something. I want you to do something for me. And that's that partnership that I think that is, it's dangerous, and if not damning for us as species, because like I said, with John Dee, Edward Kelly, Crowley, and Jack Parsons, at what cost? Because again, just because we can conjure them doesn't mean we can control them.
Now, I want to get your insights into the possibilities of what this nature of our reality really is, what our purpose here is, and there's plenty of different schools of thoughts. I love hearing all my guests' different perceptions on what we're doing here, what this reality is about. Two of the main, I guess, categories we could say, is it for our spiritual growth and benefit, or are we somehow trapped here as food or energetic food for some of these archonic parasites that we were just discussing? I want to get your thoughts on that.
I think that there is a good and bad, and I think that some beings want us to evolve and others want us to mutate. Those are not the same. The evolvement is, obviously, I think that there are good beings, like I said, that do check on us and help us and heal us. So there was a guy that, back when I used to go to church, there was a guy named Jonathan Suber, but trying to get him on my show. He won't come on. He at least hasn't responded. Whatever. Love you, Jonathan. Anyways, he's a bad dude, and he was a missionary, and he was deathly ill, and I think he was in like Ghana somewhere, and he's praying for an angel of some sort, and he said out of the corner of his eye, this is crazy, this is woo, and I didn't think I'd find woo in my old religion, man, but he said I'm looking in the corner of the room, and this box opened up like a window. And another minister that he knew all the way across the world climbed through it, prayed for him, and he said he was healed. And then he said, I'm looking through, and he said it was a whole other world. He said there were things moving by the window. This is wild. There were things flying by the window. And the man or the entity, whatever, just said, okay, you're healed, Jonathan. Gotta go. climbed back through the window and went gone.
Oh shit.
Another story that he was telling, this guy's pretty incredible, but he was talking about how he had eaten some bad food. And it was in one of those, I think it was in Africa, but he was just deathly ill, sick, you know, he was really bad off. And he tried to go out to dinner with his family. He could barely walk, but once they were trying to get him to eat, and he was hurt and he doubled over in pain, and something walked by and touched him on the back. He said it felt just like a hand. And then he said a warmth came over his body. Well, come to find out, all the way across the world at a conference, a guy named T.F. Tinney had stopped the conference and said, there's a guy, Jonathan Subert, right now that we need to pray for. And the time zones were different. It's crazy. The time zones were different. So there does seem to be a good side, and I'm not saying a good side to ETs. I'm just saying a good side, period. But even then, it's not like these people during abductions are like, hey, listen, I need to call on angels. And all of a sudden, the angels come out there with swords and start beating the crap out of the aliens. And then, you know, pow, 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 gotcha. Yeah. That's not happening. You know what I mean? So, what I'm saying essentially is there's good there. We're just trying to figure out where all of that good is.
What about the near-death experience and the aspect that some researchers believe that there's a trap in that realm, that after we die, if we make the wrong decision, if we go into the white light, we'll be reincarnated, or we'll be sent to a different dimension, a hell-like dimension, or there is some sort of life review where we're given the choice to come back? What are your thoughts on those aspects of near-death experiences?
I think that there are real near-death experiences, but I think there are simulated near-death experiences, where they will design a particular situation because they're really after a certain result. And that result could be, hey, you know, or the design, the program, really, I could be on a moped or a motorcycle and somebody pulls out in front of me on the highway or something, cuts me off, and then I'm out of my body. They orchestrated that. And so now that I'm out of my body, sometimes they will do this. They will mimic a near-death experience and then manifest as an authority figure. And so what I'm trying to say, and this is really interesting too, is that we need to quit looking for manifestations to validate our experience.
Right.
Or I should say just manifestations. Mm-hmm. Right? Because it's like with these people that say, okay, I was telling somebody this the other day. You have Dr. Barry Taft, who's in the middle of the San Pedro haunting in California, Jackie Hernandez, and in the corner of the room, there's this orb. And it's popping, boom, 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 boom. And then it pops one time, and there's a body, like an apparition from the waist up that's animated, and it's looking at them. Put that aside. We've got somebody who wrote about God being in a UFO, talking about in his front yard or his backyard. These orbs show up, and then pop, pop, boom. I, as a researcher, would be disingenuous if I don't at least think about the possibility of these beings being one of the same, or the technology they're using one of the same, or it's the same phenomenon that's using manifestations to propagate, right, and to deceive. So manifestations alone do not, I should not say, they do not define the experience. I don't. What I'm doing now is I'm not looking at the manifestations. I'm looking at the message.
Right. Right.
Because how many times have we heard? Well, I know that these beings are telling the truth because I can prove that I have them on camera. Mm-hmm. What? Right. I mean, we don't even do that right now.
Yeah.
Like right now, okay. My dad could lie to me, and I could film him doing it. I wouldn't go to somebody and say, "Look, I have the guy on film. He's telling the truth." How ignorant would I be, right? It doesn't even work in this scenario. Why? How much more would it not work with beings that we can't define? We can't quantify. They're everywhere at once, but they're nowhere at the same time. They're beside us, but away from us. You know, they're peeking around the corner, but one person sees it out of the group. How much, right? You understand my point here? It makes no sense to me. So we have to look deeper than just the manifestations, because up to this point, it's been the manifestations that they've slid under, and they've used that slithering two-fort tongue to come in with a message that might not necessarily be true.
Now let's end on this. Where do you see, as a collective, our spiritual future headed? It seems like we're in a spiritual war right now, that there's an attempt to split us off into a technocratic ideology where spirituality is nothing but a worship of technology and all the material world that we're subjected to these days, that we're being pushed that direction. Or we have a choice to go a more natural spiritual direction and not participate with some of the dystopic agendas that are being pushed forward. How do you see our future? Do you think that collectively we have a chance to go in the right direction?
I think we will. And I think that the more evolved we become, hopefully, a great deal of us will start wanting to manifest our potential, wanting to see what we're truly capable of without the assistance of technology. Now, I'm not saying, okay, I'm against cancer treatments or anything stupid like that, right? You know, I'm not saying that at all, because that would be dumb. What I am saying, though, is not to the point where we're trying to transfer our consciousness to an AI or a
Correct.
robot or something in that manner. I'm not even sure, even if the Neuralink came out, I'm not even sure I would ever have it,
right.
right?
Well,
Because at that point, like I said,
there's
it's like,
been agendas to steer and alter our perception of what spirituality is for decades, and they've done this gradually, and it is through various forms of culture creation. And like you said, I don't have a problem with tech. There's great forms of tech. There's wonderful forms of technology, but only if used in the right way that benefits us
Correct.
and doesn't send us down the wrong path.
100%. I'll say this and I'll be quiet, but it's like, and I probably talked to you on a show previous, because we've been together for, I don't know, we've done like three or four shows. But anyways, the teraphim, the biblical antiquity, I believe it was technology, but it was almost a spiritual technology where necromancers would pull up a recently deceased person, and they would carve the name of an unclean spirit into that piece of metal and implant it into that corpse. And the consciousness of that entity through technology, I believe, would then step into that body and use that body as a biological avatar, to where the family would think, okay, that's Amy or that's John. It's not, it's something else in there. So it's very risky.
This is incredible stuff, Nathaniel. Thank you so much. Before you head out, let the audience know where they can find your work. And I know you've been making quite a few appearances with Rex over there on Leak Project, right?
Yeah, it's been exciting. Of course, you know, when you have such a big audience, you get comments there that are pretty funny, you know, like I try to read them, man. I'm like, dang, dude, really? You know what I mean?
Oh yeah,
Most
don't
of them
read
are
the
great. I
comments for
love
sure. Never read
bro.
the
Oh my God. Yeah, they called me Bobcat Goldthwait. Now that I love. Hey, that I love, right? I mean, come
That
on, dude. I
is a
gained some weight
good
and I do kind of look like Bobcat, so I was kind of
one.
laughing at that, man. But yeah, dude, I love Leak. I love Rex. And yeah, 99% of comments are incredible too. Everybody loves that. But yeah, man, I have my own YouTube channel, and I'm going to be creating my Patreon, because I want to travel, man. I want to do my research. So yeah, man, I have shows coming up, which you guys can follow my social media. I'm on Instagram and Facebook. So you guys can PM me, message me. Just don't call me like someone did at 2:30 in the morning.
Oh, no. That's never
Yeah,
fun.
is this Nathaniel? No, it's not. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't answer, by the way,
Yeah.
but
Right on, man. This was fantastic. I love our conversations. Such great
thank
information.
you,
And
sir.
we
Me
will
too.
definitely do this again soon. And until next
All right.
time, everyone, have an excellent evening. We will talk again tomorrow. We'll see y'all then.